The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody wants everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In-your-face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A billion-dollar industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we'll be talking with my friend, the talented Anna Marie Cox. But before we get started with Anna Marie, this from Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Welcome to the Mike Lupica Podcast. If you listen to it or you follow my writing, you know that I'm a fanboy for Anna Marie Cox, the original Wonkette. She now writes the Talk feature for the New York Times Magazine. She has her own Very Fancy Pants podcast with friends like these. She's down from her usual six or seven jobs. Blogger, columnist, fake Cubs fan, and All right. So that's my lengthy introduction. But as we do this, I'm looking at your Twitter feed. Is that a real action figure?
It is. It is a real action figure. That is the new Sue Storm action figure for the Fantastic Four. And I did not model for it, but I am thinking of suing. I mean, she has like a much better body than I do, like, because she's an action figure, you know? Like, you can see her abs through the suit that she's wearing. Not true for me. I tend to cover that area. But yeah, it's like this really eerie thing. So I did buy one. I am looking at her right now. She's sitting on my windowsill. I have posed her for various reactions to the news, the hand on the forehead. I've had her do a little head desk slam, too. But yeah, I have my own action figure. That's like every girl's dream come true, you know, I think.
I am never going to be in your presence again without thinking of you as Sue Storm. I swear to God, I thought that was you.
I know. Well, unless you also might be in my presence and not know it, because of course I can turn invisible, because that is Sue Storm's superpower. So you may be thinking of me as something else, but you won't know that you're in my presence. It's a weird thing.
We're talking to Anna Marie Cox on the Mike Lupica Podcast. You know, one of my books for young adult readers was called Hero. It was the only one that didn't really have, wasn't based in sports. And here's how it came about. I was speaking at, I think, the American Library Association, and you know, I have the attention span of a hummingbird, and I had digressed, and I said, you know, I had this idea for a book. If you could only be one of two things, if you could fly or be invisible, which would you choose? And it touched off this amazing, like, half hour long, this big crowded room. People were yelling out, no, invisible, no, fly. So here's my question to you, Sue Storm. If you could only do one, would you fly or be invisible?
I actually, ironically, considering that I am Sue Storm, I think I would choose flying. Here we maybe segue to sports here, because one of the things that I've always loved about sports is the flight. You know, to see human beings fly, right? Like in the great sports, like whatever, almost every sport has some kind of flight to it, really graceful flight, especially basketball to me. And I am 5'5". I will never know what it's like to dunk a ball. You know, I will never know what it feels like to fly. And so I think about that sometimes when I watch sports. So I think that, yeah, I think I would choose flying. The freedom of flying, I think, overcomes like whatever mischief or profit you could make by being invisible. I think that being invisible like is about your relationship to other people. If you want to be invisible, like that means that you still want to be somehow having to do with things that other people are doing, you know, like that's the only reason to be invisible. But flying is just about the pure joy of flying, I think.
I'm talking to Anna Marie Cox, who has one of the sharpest and most honest takes about the American political scenes as anybody I know. We are having this conversation on a day when Gary Cohn, Trump's chief economic advisor, has come out with an interview in the Financial Times criticizing, without naming him, the president's response to Charlottesville. And I, in full disclosure, I just came back from doing Stephanie Ruhle's show on MSNBC with Bret Stephens of the New York Times. He thinks that Cohn will stay on. I think he will, maybe not this week or next week or even next month, he will join the conga line of people who have left this administration. What's your take on what you read from Gary Cohn today?
I mean, I think it might be suicide by media, you know. He's going to get himself fired rather than quit. Because that type of interview is what, you know, can end employment for Trump, right? If you get more attention than him and if you criticize him. So it's hard for me to believe that Gary Cohn wouldn't know that that's a possibility in giving that interview. Which is a strange thing, though, right? Because I don't know what the purpose is. If you know you're going to get fired, like, isn't the more honorable thing to resign over this?
We just had this We just had this conversation. Yeah. I said it's very difficult to use the word honor with this administration, but ultimately you have to decide whether to go or whether to stay.
And I actually think that what's really sad here is that he clearly, you know, I think he may be just dumber than we think, and he doesn't think he's going to get fired. Or he knows something that we don't about Trump and doesn't think he's going to get fired. But that's why I don't find this particularly honorable. Like, if you think that it's a dishonorable act that Trump has done something immoral, which I think most of us agree that he has, then there's no argument for you to stay. I think there, you know, I've heard the argument for his NAT security, like his NATSEC people to stay. And I do, I guess, want someone there to throw themselves between Trump's finger and the red button to launch the nukes, right?
Right, yeah, uh-huh.
But an economic advisor? I don't know. Like, I don't know how much good Gary Cohn has done, really. Like, they don't have a tax policy. Like, that's the other lens you need to be using to see this situation through, right? Like, what has Gary Cohn done? I mean, I guess he scaled back, you know, Trump was going to nuke NAFTA, but I think that probably there are other people in the White House that would have kept him from doing that as well, and other world leaders that kept him from doing that. He didn't keep Trump from pulling out of the Paris Accords. There isn't going to be a tax policy plan that comes out of the White House. There has been no real legislation out of the White House, period, about anything, but especially not about economics. So what is Gary Cohn really doing there that's so important? I don't really have a good idea about that. So, yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. I mean, I what else can we say about this situation, right? Like, I mean, did you really respect Gary Cohn before he went to the Trump administration? Like, I didn't have strong feelings about him then. So I guess that was my expectations weren't that high.
Well, and the other thing about this interview, we kind of talked about this a little bit with Stephanie today is, you know, if you read this statement, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, well, they're not going to run this Jew out of office. And I said, he's trying to make it sound like if he quits that somehow the terrorists have won, Anna Maria. Makes it sound like the most noble act by staying on a job that he probably shouldn't be on in an administration that maybe only the generals can save and probably not even been, but didn't you get the sense that this was brand protection today? Like, I'm really a good guy, even if I stay on.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. And I also think if he thinks that it's somehow more a testament to his commitment to anti-bigotry to stay on, tell that to the rabbis that canceled their call with Trump, right? Like, the rabbis who canceled their annual call with him, this usual call with the president, didn't have a problem with canceling, right? Like, and I would think they would know. I would think they would know if there was, if the greater good would be served by actually, you know, linking arms with this administration. They clearly didn't feel that way. No, you know, no one's going to leave this administration out of a sense of honor, because they wouldn't, if they had honor, they wouldn't have joined. Like, that's, you know, again, I think we can make some, have some leeway in that area for the generals who have a, whose idea of service is different than a civilian's, right? And who also, I think, really do think of their job as serving the country and not the president. But I don't think that's true for anyone else there. And I'm hesitant to think that any kind of change can come from the inside with this administration. I am just looking not for a pivot, but for an exit at this point. I have been skeptical from the beginning about the sort of far out theories about how his presidency might end, 25th Amendment, impeachment, you know, in the first year or two. But his behavior is so outrageous, and he is alienating so many people, both in segments of the population and in individual senators and congressmen. I don't think this is sustainable, and he's not going to change.
You know, you just used a word that as I was waiting to get on today, I was talking with Brett Stevens, and I said, this may sound like a naive question, but that's okay. It won't be the last I ever ask. But is this sustainable? And I don't believe it's sustainable. I actually do not believe. I don't know whether it is going to be the 25th Amendment. I don't know whether it will be impeachment. I don't know whether there will a moment will arrive, Anna Marie, where his ego can't stand being a laughingstock when his poll numbers go under 30% and he'll actually resign. But let me ask you this, because I always say this. I said to my wife one day, it's worse than I thought it was going to be. And she looked at me and she said, no, it's exactly the way I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think that it, I guess I tried not to think too hard about what it was going to be like, because I learned some lessons from the election. I didn't think he'd win. I will go ahead and claim the tragic, you know, comfort that I did predict that he could win the nomination. But I thought America was better than this. And actually, America is. America as a whole is better than this. You know, he did not win the popular vote. I didn't think he'd win the presidency. So I really tried to not have any firm ideas about what this is going to turn out to be like. But I will say it's not surprising, right? None of what has happened, zero of what has happened is surprising. Even his reaction to Charlottesville, not surprising. You know, that groundwork was laid out with how he dealt with David Duke during the election. And also the central truth of Donald Trump is that he, if you say something nice about him, if you like him, he likes you, right? Like, that is just one of the only truths there is about Trump. And so if the white nationalists have nice things to say about him, he'll say nice things about them. That's the way it goes. And I want to say something. I said this on the Positive America podcast this week, and I think it's important for everyone to understand, which is that that's a national security issue, that he is so easily manipulated and that truth about him is so well known. Foreign actors have already used that to interfere with our election, right, to interfere with our politics. They can figure out ways to use it further. Friendly and unfriendly actors in other nations see this about our president, that he is so easily manipulated, like a child is, like a six-year-old is. And that's not just like a bad personality trait. That is something that is dangerous. Like, it is dangerous for us. And that's one of the reasons why I think this is unsustainable.
We're talking with Anna Marie Cox on the Mike Lupica podcast. Much more with Anna Marie after this from Exxon and Mobil Synergy Gasoline. Engineered to provide better gas mileage, lower emissions, and improve engine responsiveness with 7 key ingredients. Stop by your nearest Exxon or Mobil station today to experience Synergy Gasoline. We're talking to Anna Marie Cox. Her podcast is called With Friends Like These. She does the talk feature in the New York Times Magazine, former Wonkette, former correspondent for MTV. You know, as I was looking over what Cohn said, to get back to Gary Cohn for just one second, if you break down what he said, He's accusing the president of doing the thing that the president yelled and screamed that he wasn't doing, and waving those papers the other night in Phoenix and saying that he had an appropriate response. He had a measured response to Charlottesville, except that's the opposite of what Gary Cohn is saying. And that's why whatever spin is put on what Cohn did, that's why I think he's gone. I don't talk about sustainable. I don't think his role in this White House, because you said something before, nobody, even for a news cycle, is supposed to be bigger than this president.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's the other truth about him, right? It's sort of the obverse of, like, if you say something nice about me, I like you, which is that you can't be bigger than me, right? Like, that's everything is about his ego. Every single thing that is true about this president is about his towering and yet suckingly void ego. Yeah. Like, it is his black hole of megalomania. You can't even be bigger than a news cycle, than him. And so Cohn getting this attention is definitely bad. I mean, it's possible that he lasts for a while, but there's definitely Trump, because the other weird thing about Trump is that he's a coward. It's not a surprise because bullies are cowards, but he's famously reluctant to confront people. So I don't think Cohn is gone like tomorrow necessarily, but he's definitely, you know, edging to the outskirts and will be gone sooner rather than later, unless, you know, he knows something that we don't. I mean, the P tape exists, maybe, right? Like, maybe right. That's who has it. Although, if he had that, hopefully he would be using it, that leverage, for a lot more than just kind of padding about the West Wing.
Talking to Anna Marie Cox on the Mike Lubega podcast. So I'm watching the speech in Phoenix the other night, except you can't really call it a speech. It was beyond a speech, whatever it was. Okay. And I think I tweeted out in the middle of the rant about the media, well, clearly General Kelly has this whole thing under control, because and even guys whose work I respect, like Phil Rucker in the Washington Post, saying this is a new President Trump. And I'm thinking, on what planet is there going to be a new President Trump? It's like Fareed Zakaria saying tonight he became president, or Van Jones, tonight he became president. But when you watch, what was your visceral reaction watching as he had clearly veered off prompter, veered across like three lanes to go into one of the great attacks, even for him, on a free press that I've ever heard?
Well, to be totally honest with you, I had trouble watching the speech because there was a Cubs game on.
Oh, here we go. Don't do this. Don't do this. You know you don't. Your husband loves the Cubs. You do not love the Cubs.
And I was watching with my husband. So that's the end of the sentence.
Okay,
there's a Cubs
game
on, and I was watching with my husband. So we're doing the thing where we're like, it's double play on DirecTV, where you can like jump between two channels and be able to rewind.
Yeah.
So we were doing that. And so I didn't see everything quite in a row. So we were just dipping in and out. So I feel like I didn't probably get the full crazy that is there. But it was definitely nuts. But because we were dipping it out of it, I actually think maybe I had a little bit more of an idea of its impact in one way than other people did, which is just how freaking long it was.
Yeah. I think it was 80 minutes in the end.
Which when you think about it, like John, my husband, said, was it really that much crazier than anything else he's done? And I said, it was in the fact it was so long, and that he was so focused on the media, because of course he bashes the media all the time, but I'm sure someone has done an analysis that to spend that much time of what is ostensibly, you know, a speech by the president of the United States, who has, one would hope, other things on his mind, to spend that much time on this particular grievance with the media is just mind-boggling. And someone else tweeted this, so I can't take full credit for the observation, but it has haunted me since then. Imagine being as wealthy and as powerful as Trump is, and this being the thing that you obsess about. This petty grievance about what people who are relatively powerless and, you know, have to say about you. He has nuclear weapons at his command, but what he really wants to do is pick a fight with the New York Times. This is, it's madness. It really is.
And, you know, when you look at what he's done, and this is our business, okay, our business, which I do believe is an honorable business and probably as honorable right now as and important as it's ever been. I've devoted my entire adult life. I started writing for the Boston Globe when I was still at Boston College. So I love this business, okay? I ask you this seriously. When is he going to start putting journalists in peril by pointing at them the way he does at these rallies and turning the crowds on him?
I think he already has. I mean, someone else asked this question of me, you know, when are journalists going to start getting beat up because of Trump? We have a new congressman that has done this, right? Like the Gary Gianforte in Montana body slammed a reporter from The Guardian. And I don't think he would have done that in another era, you know? And so I think that violence has sort of already begun, and it's just a question of how bad it gets. And have you, we've probably talked about this, but have you been to a Trump rally?
No, I have not.
Right. If you have to take that long to answer, it's probably a no, because they are something. You're not going to forget it. I've been to two, and I've been there when he has the crowd turn around and yell at the media pen in the back.
Right.
And it is unlike anything else I've ever experienced in my life as a journalist or just in my life, period. The only time I have felt frightened for my physical safety as a journalist has been at a Trump rally. And that's, you know, because I cover politics. I don't cover, you know, crime. I don't cover wars. I don't cover things where I'm usually in harm's way. To have thousands of people turn their focus on you and just chant things that, you know, wish you harm. There are probably people out there, let's face it, people from vulnerable communities, LGBTQ brothers and sisters, minority brothers and sisters out there who have had that happen to them, right? I can never know what that feels like, but I now have an idea of what it feels like to face a mob that hates you because of who you are. Imagine now Trump's doing that with those LGBTQ and people of color as well. That's the thing, is he's doing it to journalists, and he's doing it in a much more serious way to even more vulnerable populations.
We're talking to Anna Marie Cox, who, if you listen to this podcast or read my column, you know how much respect I have for her journalistic chops and her opinions. Okay, when you look at Kelly and Mattis and McMaster, there's a part of me, you know, my dad was my 93-year-old father was a bombardier during World War II. He was the greatest generation in all possible ways and still is, and is appalled by what he's seeing. Okay. Do you really think that these generals look at their jobs and their roles and say, guess what? We're all that's standing between here and the apocalypse.
Yeah, I think that they do. I very much think they do. I think Axios, the new media and politics tip sheet out there, they've had sort of a running way of talking about it, which is the Committee to Save America.
Right.
Which is probably true on the one hand, but on the other hand, think about it this way. If you know that you are standing between Trump and the apocalypse, isn't your larger duty to the country to
remove
get that guy out of there?
Yeah, to remove him. I know.
If you think that he's that dangerous, you should be talking to Congress about it, not whispering to journalists.
It's true. I sometimes look at what's going on, and I think of like those doomsday political novels of my youth, like 7 Days in May and books like that, where the generals actually tried to take over the country. When I look at what's going on, and again, we keep using the word sustainable because I can't think of another word to use. I look at the current political scene. I actually said this today on television, and I meant it from my heart. I wasn't trying to be snarky or as snarky as usual. But all morning long, we all watched the graphic, you know, in the corner of the screen about the storm in Texas, okay? And I was thinking, That graphic could be up for the Trump administration every single day. And we just, and it just veers from being a category one Trump storm to a category two Trump storm to a category three. But we live in a constant state of storm these days. And I keep thinking it's going to abate, Anna Marie, but it doesn't. And that's why so much of this country feels like it is in a constant state of nervous breakdown.
Which is another thing that's not sustainable, right? I hope it's not sustainable. I think that what happens if you exist like this for too long is your whole democracy, I mean, I guess our democracy has already started to erode. I worry that it erodes further. Because at least, and I'll say this, at least there's some sort of silver lining to this storm, or at least it is not quite fully dark yet, which is that people still care. You know, the ratings for our cable news are up. The subscriptions for newspapers are up. People are paying attention. The massive counter protests that have come in Boston at Trump's rally in Phoenix. People care. People are showing that they care. And that is resistance, right? And I don't mean like hashtag resistance. You have to resist the president. But people are just paying attention and doing something about it. And that's what keeps democracy alive. When people stop paying attention and stop caring, that's when we'll really be in trouble, right? So in some ways, perhaps in a perverse way, Trump is sowing the seeds of his own demise by keeping up this theatricality, right? Like, you can't look away at what he's doing. And he doesn't want us to look away. But if he keeps the focus on him, he's going to do something that's bad enough that I think the better angels of the Republicans on the Hill will have to come forward. I'm more optimistic about the Senate than the House. But it may take that. I do think in 2018, you know, the chances are better than they would be in any other circumstance that Democrats are going to get a majority, or that, you know, it'll just be untenable to not say that you're going to investigate and perhaps have consequences for Trump. And also one of the other things like that's come out of this is people, because we're talking so much about 18, because we're talking so much about Congress, people are actually learning about the gerrymandered districts that we have, right? And how unequally Congress is apportioned and how unfair the electoral map is. And that's something that people probably have never, a lot of people have never even really thought about, right? And Voting Rights Act, people are paying attention to that too. The violations of the Voting Rights Act and the way like Texas has redrawn its districts and the way that North Carolina has redrawn its districts. That used to be the provenance of just super, super nerds, right? Like real wonks. And now it's something that because people want to know how this is going to end, they're paying a little more attention to. And I imagine there's going to be more interest than ever in an off-year election. I think this off-year election, if things continue the way they are, will probably be one of the highest turnouts we've ever had.
That's one of the things that we're talking to Anna Marie Cox on the Mike Lubica podcast. It's one of the things that does make you heart sick about America. I may be off on my math, but is it like 45 million registered voters did not vote in the last election that, you know, I don't want to hear from them now. All I want to hear from them is next time I'm going to vote, because you think what a small percentage of those who have the same sorts of concerns about America that we have, could have changed this whole outcome. And you know, and this is not some whiny defense of Hillary Clinton. I never thought she was a good candidate. I was saying to somebody yesterday, the thing that bothered me, even when I thought she could, I still thought she'd get to like 300 electoral votes, was when she was running for the Senate in New York State, Anna Marie, here's who she beat: Rick Lazio and John Spencer. Okay, so she'd never gone up against anybody formidable, and then when she did with Obama, she lost, and then she comes up against this phenomenon. But when you see how few votes it would have taken to change the course of American history, it scares the shit out of you.
Mm-hmm. The exact count, I believe, I just looked it up while we're talking, is 77,744 votes. in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania is what swung the election.
Right.
So that's as someone else pointed out, that's barely enough to fill like a Penn State's football stadium. it's a very not very well attended NFL game, right? So it can make a. That's how many people have to turn out. So if they can just get that kind of turnout, if we can just edge the turnout a little bit in 2018, you know, things can change. And that's the only way that things are assured to change is if Congress changes hands. If it doesn't, you know, Republicans have not shown very much courage at all. I believe the count is 7 congressional Republicans said something explicitly about Trump's response to Charlottesville. 7.
So, you know, along these lines, when we talk about 18 and 2020, all right, what possible strategy do you think he has? Does he think he can continue to drill down into his base and then what? Ride gerrymandered districts and voter suppression to a second term? What math, what template is he working off of that his current strategy he sees as a winner going forward?
Oh, I mean, Mike, you know he's not planning. I mean, this man doesn't plan between, you know, breakfast and lunch, much less between electoral cycles. This morning, he tweeted 2 contradictory things about Congress.
It's so, wait a minute. We have to talk about that because he said if they don't change the filibuster rules, the second one was if they don't change the filibuster rules, no bills will get passed. 20 minutes after saying that he was setting records basically for passing bills.
That is right. Yes. So he's not thinking. He has been, because of this crazy black swan election, he has been given what he thinks is validation and proof that his weird, intuitive, completely self-involved in approach to politics works. So I don't think he thinks he needs to think about the future. He thinks it's just going to work. What he does works. He probably does not know what the word gerrymandered, he probably thinks gerrymandered is, you know, one of the lesser Kardashian boyfriends, right? Like gerrymander. I mean, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't know what doesn't involve him. So I don't think he's thinking about this at all. I think Republicans are thinking about those gerrymandered districts and thinking about voter suppression. I've said before, my darkest conspiracy theory about all this is that the Republicans are behaving like a party that doesn't think it needs to win another fair election. You know, I worry about that. But those courts have come through in Texas, have come through in North Carolina. People are paying attention. Sunlight will disinfect eventually. So I'm hopeful about those things. And his lack of attention, his total self-involvement can be what brings him down, hopefully.
We'll have more with the great Anna Marie Cox after this from ZipRecruiter. Whether football, basketball, or baseball is your sport of choice, you know that the key to winning is a strong roster. So when you're hiring in business, you need to get the best talent and use ZipRecruiter. At ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your position. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of the jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate. Listen to this. In just 24 hours. And right now, my listeners can start forming their own winning team on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. Try it for free today at ZipRecruiter.com/Lupica. You know, I keep this around and I read it sometimes just to give me hope, not just about our business, but about the country. And this was what Ed Murrow said about McCarthy. This is no time for men who oppose Senator McCarthy's methods to keep silent or for those who approve. We can deny our heritage and our history, but we cannot escape responsibility for the result. There is no way for a citizen of a republic to abdicate his responsibilities. As a nation, we have come into our full inheritance at a tender age. We proclaim ourselves, as indeed we are, the defenders of freedom wherever it continues to exist in the world, but we cannot defend freedom abroad by deserting it at home. Man, that's something that somebody could say right now, Anna Marie.
Mm-hmm. It is. And I am not for patting ourselves on the back too much. You know, I find the Washington Post "democracy dies in darkness" slogan to be something, you know, more fitting for an action movie than a newspaper. But it doesn't mean it's not true. It doesn't mean that we don't have a duty to stand against what we know is wrong. You know, I told a story in my podcast last week about my dad, which is that it turns out I had always known he like protested in the 60s, but I kind of thought, well, everyone did.
Right.
And a couple of years ago, I actually asked him about it. And he said, I asked him when, and he said 1962. And I said, wow, that's really early. I didn't realize that protests against the war, you know, started that early. And he's like, oh, well, it wasn't against the war. We picketed, you know, white only establishments. And I asked him some more questions. And it turned out when he was at TCU, he was a member of the Young Democrats, and a young African-American man that came to speak to them and said that he and his group were organizing these pickets. If anyone was interested, they should come on Saturdays. And they would you know, ferry them there and hold them, you know, tell them where to go and give them the signs. And I was like, wait, someone from the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee came to you? I was like, wait, you are like, Dad, you marched with SNCC? And he's like, oh, I guess I did. Yeah, I guess I did. And yesterday I talked to him about it, and he said something I loved him so much. He said, at the time, it just wasn't even a question for him. It was the right thing to do. He did say he wondered why other people weren't more people doing it, right? Because of course now in the brightness of history, you and I can look at that and be like, well, of course that's the right call. But it wasn't the obvious right call to everyone at that time. But where do we want to stand in history? You know, where do we want to be when that bright light of our national, you know, story shines on us? I want to be at a place like where my dad was, you know, and what's also important about that story is it was considered extreme to go do that.
Right.
There were people saying, oh yes, we should end segregation. All lots of smart people nodding with each other and saying we should end segregation. But to go and pick up a sign and march with African Americans in front of an all-white establishment was not something that everybody did. More people need to be marching today. More people need to be standing up today. More people need to be making calls, you know, going to these vigils, voting in off your elections at the very, very least. But you need, this is, if you wondered what side of history you would fall on in the past, now is the time, you know, for you to make that decision moving forward. I've also said in slightly more, you know, fanciful way, if you ever wondered how you'd fare in like a young adult dystopian novel, would you be the Katniss Everdeen, you know? Would you be the Harry Potter for that matter? Like, here is your chance. You have a chance to be a hero. You have a chance to stand on the side of what is truly good against something that is truly bad. And people need to do it. I don't have any other way to put it. As journalists, we have tools that other people don't have, and we don't have tools that other people do have. Like, it is harder for journalists to march, right? It is not all journalists can do that. It is harder for journalists to join the picket lines. But journalists can use the tools that we have. And if you're not a journalist, you should be using the tools that journalists don't have, which is to go out and do what is right and add your voices to the voices of people who are already suffering. There's no other way that you can get through this and know that history will look back kindly on you.
We're talking to Anna Marie Cox. She is in charge of and contributes the talk feature in the New York Times Magazine. With Friends Like These is the name of her podcast. She has long been one of the sharpest commentators on the current political scene. So let me ask you this, okay? Let's say Trump runs again, which I'm not, for all this re-election talk, I'm not sure he will, because I actually don't think he thinks this is as fun as he thought it was going to be. Like being free, leader of the free world, he thought it was going to be like an airplane hangar rally every single day. Who beats him if he runs again? Who is the Democrat? Who is the populist Democrat who stands up, takes him on straight up and beats him?
Gosh, that is hard to answer, because right now the, you know, theoretical Democrat can do it pretty easily. But the problem is you can't run a theoretical Democrat, right? You have to run a real person. I like Sherrod Brown a lot. Senator from Ohio,
yep,
would be a kind of obvious choice in many ways. Ohio would be a good state to have in your back pocket. He's very serious on labor issues, on income inequality issues, on corruption issues. He isn't someone that everyone's talking about. I'm not even sure if it's something that he hasn't, well, every senator has it in mind, right? I know a lot of people love Elizabeth Warren. I love Elizabeth Warren. I'm not sure if she can win a national election.
The answer is she cannot.
Right.
No, I admire her too, but you'll be president before she will.
It is possible that a Sherrod Brown, Elizabeth Warren ticket would be just the thing that the world needs. It would be nice to have a person of color run, especially given how Trump treats people of color. That would certainly be a stark contrast. A lot of people like Kamala Harris. I think that she's interesting. She's a former prosecutor, which would alienate some people, the social justice folks like myself. Our nation's prosecutors have not shown themselves to be particularly good allies in a lot of ways. But she's also shown that she listens to people on issues around criminal justice. And she's certainly a vibrant, charismatic person. And, you know, California is another good state to have, although we kind of already have it, right? And so that would be the problem with California. So I think we've named, I mean, people like Cory Booker, but he's lovely. I think he's a really interesting and serious person. I'm not sure New Jersey is like the place you're going to get your next president from, you know? And I think that he's pissed off too many people on the left. And one of the cool things about Kamala Harris is that she's actually not been senator long enough to rack up a voting record that would piss off the left very much. So she has, that's probably good. I don't know. Who are you thinking?
Well,
they could probably run a cardboard cutout and do pretty well, but they can't run a cardboard cutout.
I'll tell you who I'm thinking about, and he's my homeboy, but if he were from Ohio, he'd be your dream candidate, and that's Chris Murphy. I think Chris Murphy...
Oh, yeah.
I think his beliefs are admirable. I think he is courageous. I think he has spoken out on all the things... a traditional Democrat has spoken up, but I worry now that whoever is going to take back this country from these guys is going to have to be a more centrist Democrat. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I think we'll see, right? Because one of the ways that Trump won is promising universal health care, which he didn't do. He said everyone's going to be covered. He didn't say how he was going to do it. But one of the weirder things to come out of the ACA fight was the growing popularity of the idea of everyone having health care, of some form of nationalized health care, whether it's Medicare for all or Medicaid for all, or a true single payer plan or a true, national insurance plan. People now think that might be a good idea. There are enough people tired of fighting over healthcare that they're open to the idea of doing something like that, which used to be considered just way too radical to even bring up in a national campaign or even a Senate campaign. So I think that Democrats would probably run a more populist economic agenda than they've thought they could in the past. I think things like free college also, you know, have shown themselves to be popular, and people are less concerned about that being some kind of creeping socialism. So I think that you can probably get away with more lefty populism than has previously been assumed. And I also think that on the social front, Trump ran, again, as a fairly socially liberal person. I mean, he made a lot of weird promises to the evangelicals, and I guess he's keeping them. But you don't need the evangelicals to win, necessarily. It's a relatively small group of Americans, after all. And if anything, you know, Trump's own personal vulgarity has shown that maybe you can, if you have some statesmanship, but are liberal on social issues, people will accept that. So I'm not sure if you need a true centrist. I mean, I think you need someone who's going to say that they can work with the other side and who can find areas to work with the other side. I think people will be hungry for that. But I think that maybe some Republicans have learned that they can shift too. My show is partially about talking to never Trumpers about what our coalition looks like once there is no Trump. You know, like, yep. Can we continue to be on the same side of some fight once our common enemy disappears? And I have some hope there. You know, I interviewed Tom Nichols, who's a national security Republican, never Trump guy, last week, and we talked about race in the Republican Party. And he was defensive, which is understandable, but we kind of got to a place where he was agreeing that we need to talk about the historical, systematic racism that the modern Republican Party has helped enable, you know, like things around criminal justice, around voting rights. And that's an amazing thing, right? To have someone who's kind of a standard issue conservative be able to say, you know what, maybe these things that I supported, that I felt I was supporting out of, you know, for good reasons, I now see the connection between the suppression of voting rights and what happened in Charlottesville. Because there is a connection. It's a long one. It's not like two steps, but it is a connection. So I'm hopeful that perhaps that this the Never Trump coalition can continue to talk to each other once Trump is gone. That might be, you know, I would hope that is Trump's lasting contribution to America, is that we continue to, is that some fraction of the two parties realize that it's possible to work together and to talk about ideas and to criticize each other and not run to our opposite corners as soon as, you know, it gets uncomfortable.
I love talking about this stuff with you. Thank you so much for doing this today. I know you've got your own podcast to worry about, but I have to have you on from time to time because you're one of the capitals of common sense and political commentary. So thank you for doing this again.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And, you know, I mean, I do like Chris Bryant. And that's a genuine love affair right there. So I hope I get some credit for that, even if I'm not a true Cubs fan.
Anna Marie Cox on the Mike Lubica podcast. This is the kind of conversation we have every single week. Please continue. Our numbers continue to grow. Please download this podcast. Please subscribe. Go to the comments section. Leave comments. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.